I'd like to call the meeting to order. Starting out by introducing the head table. First of all, on my right and your left is Barry Bozak of F. Everstadt. Sitting next to him is Mark Steinkraus, Manager Investor Relations of DEC. Sitting next to him is Steve Dube of Dean Witter Reynolds. Next to Steve is Al Bertacci, Vice President, Finance and Administration. And next to Al is Peter LeBay of Smith Barney. On my far left and your far right is Martin Simpson of the firm that bears his name. Sitting next to him is Al Mullen, Vice President, Corporate Relations of the Corporation. Sitting next to him is our principal speaker, Ken Olson. I'll go back to his very short biography a moment or two later. And sitting next to him is Bob Christensen of A.G. Becker. I'm Rich Gotchman of J&W Seligman. I'd like to make the announcement that copies of the speech will not be available at the end of the meeting, but excerpts of the speech will be mailed out for those of you who fill out those cards someplace on the table. In introducing Ken, I'm going to skip all the stuff on the biography. And the most important thing is that he founded Digital Equipment 25 years ago. Ken, welcome to the New York Society of Security Analysts.
It's been 2.5 years since we were here last. The question at the time is still the same question, and that is, same question that's going on for 2.5 years, what do you see about the recession? Hopefully, if you have me back in 2.5 years, that question will not be still on our tongues. We also had another problem at that time. We had an enormous backlog, and our customers were terribly unhappy with us. The question was, are we having trouble with getting components and getting people? At that time, we said by careful planning and treating our suppliers well, we had all the components we need, and by having challenging jobs to get all the people we need. Well, today the answer is a little differently. Yes, we are starting to feel the recession. Eventually, we had to. And the suppliers are very helpful today. A year ago, we were signing contracts with semiconductor houses for 3 years by part number in order to get guaranteed supply. Now they visit us all the time, the top man does, and it's a nice feeling. As far as the recession is concerned, we had to feel it eventually because we do supply the capital equipment market. And sometime in the last few months, the people in business have become quite cautious. For about a year now, internally, we've been saying, good likelihood we have a recession for a long time. And even if the odds are small, we ought to plan on one for at least 4 years. And with that thinking, we've been able to do quite well. Slowly, this kind of thinking has permeated business in just the last few months, and capital expenditures are being much more cautious. Something is happening even in the last few weeks, and we don't understand what it is. It might be the government being slow on deciding on a budget, might be some plans the German government has on tax credits, but we're not sure what's going to happen in the next couple of quarters. But in general, we're enthusiastic about business. As a matter of fact, for several years, I've been very ill at ease, very worried about our business besides the country. When things are booming, it's awfully hard to get things done. When we can't get the parts, We couldn't make anything more, and we couldn't sell anything more because we're so overwhelmed with orders. It's very hard to get things done. In order to produce things to keep the customers from complaining too much, we just put money and people into the problem, and it is very ill at ease feeling. Now, for this last year, I can see I've never had so much fun, never worked so hard, and never seen so many things gotten done. It's so much fun to have projects that 2 years ago would have taken literally 2 years to do, and now see them happen in a matter of weeks. Now, if you have some idea for a product, people work weekends, way into the night, get it done. You call up a supplier, and they'll work all night and get it done. And things which I used to say, I hope my son never works in a place where projects are 2 years or 4 years. That's too long for a young person to work on a project. And now when things get done quickly, it is really fun. It's also great in the company where when we were in trouble just delivering things, it was very hard to work, get efficiency. When things slow down a little bit, boy, we can do all sorts of things. We're now enjoying very significant increases in efficiency in sales, in engineering, definitely in manufacturing, and very much so in our general overhead. So for the future, we, with all the new products we're coming out with, we are just tremendously enthusiastic and really having fun. Now, someone asked when good times were coming. I have a little trouble answering that question. First of all, I'm not sure I want the economy to turn around. I have a lot of friends, particularly in Detroit, and I wouldn't want to tell them that we're really enjoying the recession. But if you look at just us, I wouldn't want things to turn around too soon. For all my friends, I really would, and it's a good thing I don't have any choice. But we're coming out of this much stronger with a much stronger set of products. Now, the product set we have, I reviewed 2.5 years ago, and I'll go over it again today. At that time, our VAX computer, our 32-bit computer, was just 1.5 years old. It had started to become the standard in the 32-bit computer business, and since then, it has just mushroomed. Now, most of the engineering projects are based on VAX computers. They're also used extensively in office applications and in many control applications. It probably has been the most exciting computer in many years. Since then, we have come out with a smaller VAX, which makes it a much broader line. And at the Hanover Fair in May, Hanover, Germany, we're going to announce our new small VAX, the first one we call 780, the one we came out with a year ago or so was 750, and in May we're going to announce a 730. With that 730, it will make a great engineering machine for CAD work. One of these machines with two workstations, which we will announce a little later in the year, will make a great almost individual CAD system. And then all those applications which are very powerful VAX machines couldn't compete in, this will be right in the middle of the competition. And it's working out well and looks very promising. Later on, we'll announce how we cluster VAXes. When we put VAXes in the clusters, we can use the clustering for either gaining power. If you put 16 of them together, we can get 16 times the power, almost. or share some of that power in order to get redundancy and reliability. We then are also working on microprocessor faxes. This has been going on for 2, maybe 3 years. It'll be some time before we're shipping them. But getting a whole fax machine, which is a giant computer, at least in our scale, and getting all of that on a small number of chips will be a dramatic machine. It's coming well, but that is a 5-year project. And we have also plans for a smaller micro vax. We also have a new machine coming, which we won't announce for a little while, won't deliver for, it's working well, but won't deliver for well over a year in the 1020 area. That is our 36-bit market. This is a architecture which we started in the early 60s. It has become the standard of time sharing. Much of the world uses it for their time sharing and scientific and even banking type calculations. And because so much of the world is dependent on it, and because the architecture is still so powerful, we have this new machine coming, and we expect to service that industry and that market for a long time to come. The 16-bit computer business has been our mainstay for many years. We call that our PDB-11. We have several machines just about ready that low end of the 16-bit market that with the disks we're putting on them will be very powerful machines for many of the office applications and many of the control applications. And we see this business going on forever. And there we have, much of it today is based on microprocessor 11 machines, some of which we make ourselves. And we have a new one coming along, which a new microprocessor 11, which will make that line go on indefinitely and really make it a powerful machine. We also sell the 11 machines as microprocessors on single boards. We don't sell very many of the chips themselves, but mounted on a board, it is the largest selling microprocessor on a board. The question is always asked, why are we so late in what has gotten to be known as the personal computer business? There's a number of reasons. First of all, we kind of like to think that was our market. We started the company in order to do just that. The thing we had in mind, we started the company, was to make a machine so small, so inexpensive, so easy to use, that people could sit down, have it to themselves, and do interactive computing. That was the idea which we took from MIT. And that was the whole line of machines that we've been making through the years. So we kind of think that's our market. Even the video games came about from the computers we built, where the kids, starting at MIT, started playing video games. I think the first one was called Space Wars. Short story about that. We had Space War in our place, early 60s, 62 or so, and an engineer from NASA came by. And one of the things you could do with Space War is try to put your, it was a war, but you could take one of the vehicles and try to put it in orbit. It was so counterintuitive, most of us couldn't do it. Play with it, sometime be successful. An orbit is just doesn't go according to your intuition. Engineer from NASA sat down and put it in orbit right away. But you can see out of that came all these things you see today where your kids spend all their money in the arcades. The other reason we haven't been in what is now called the personal computer business was that for the last 3 or 4 years, we've been so overwhelmed with orders. Companies were crying, claiming they were going out of business if we didn't deliver to them. The last thing we should do is go into something new and put our resources into that. We also had another idea which limited us. The people in the small computer business, the personal computer business, they're all our friends. Most of them use our computers for their design. Many of them use our computers for their accounting. And we are friends with all of them. Their approach in general, several of them anyway, is to start off with a television-quality computer. First of all, for home use, and then increase the quality so that eventually it's good enough to use in the business. Our attitude is just the opposite. We will only make a computer which is quality enough to run a business. We want only industrial, commercial quality machines. And we will work then to make the price low enough to compete in these markets. But we start only from the level of commercial quality. So we're not, in effect, competing, and we're aiming in different directions. We also have another idea, which we may lose eventually. The rumors are, and I've seen no real data on this, that in some places, like California, half of the personal computers are in people's closets unused. I don't know if that's true or not. But from our point of view, the computers we build, we want running every day doing something useful. And if any significant number ever ended up in the closet being unused, it would break our heart. Almost every computer we've ever built is in use today and running, and that's the only kind we want to build. Now, the question is asked, are we late? And the answer is, we don't think so. If you look at those products in which we have been most successful in the past, it always appeared that we were late. When we went into the 16-bit computer business, it looked like we were the last one. We really were, I think, for a number of reasons. First of all, we were making an 18-bit computer, and we were sure that was better. 2 bits is always better. So for a long time, we fought the 16-bit machine. Then when IBM set the standard, we had to go along. When we finally did, everybody else was there. We knew everything that was done. And we were then in a position to design the machine better than everyone else. And we should have. We were last one there. We first came out with our PDP-11. We were ready to go. Gordon Bell, our now Vice President of Engineering, was a consultant at Carnegie. And he said, no way, it wasn't good enough. So he stopped everything, started all over again. So several years' work, and at least 2 attempts, probably a lot more, we came out with a PDP-11, which became the standard of the industry. It had the features built into it. It had the thought that went into it that would make a machine that would last all these years and for many more. Indeed, it's the basis of our VAX machine. When we designed the VAX machine, it looked like then we were the last people to make a 32-bit machine. Okay, everybody else had 32 bits but us. And we were late. But being late, and having looked at everyone else, we then designed a machine that had all the features in it we wanted. Indeed, it had a lot more features, and indeed cost more than anyone else's. But being last, we built the machine that we felt people wanted, and we turned out we were right. The same thing happened in other products that have worked out well for us. When we went into the computer printer business, we really looked like we were last then. But we knew what we wanted in the computer, and we ended up dominating the computer printer market. When we decided to make a cathode ray CRT terminal, then there were dozens of people in the market. It seemed like everybody was making one. but we knew what we wanted, and we built one that had the features that we needed in our computers, and it ended up, our VT100 is probably the most copied piece of electronics in the world today. I think there are 20 people who make almost an exact copy of it, and many people who make copies that at least do the same thing. So when we're going into the personal computer business, we have perhaps some disadvantages, but some enormous advantages. The disadvantage or the advantage is we know everything we want to do with that machine. And in the month of May, we're going to announce our personal computer business products. There'll be three of them. I don't want to give the announcement today, so I'll edge on what I say. But one of the machines, which is roughly comparable with the better ones in the market today by one of our bigger competitors, has almost we have almost twice the amount of logic in ours. Now, I don't think it's that they're smarter than we are. It's just that we put more features in there. We've just been in this business so long, we know what we want in there. Now, one can say, for a cost-sensitive business, we are making a mistake. But our strategy is, after a while, the cost of the logic is unimportant, and our price will get down to the rest of them, and it's the features we have in there from the start that are what counts. With three machines, we're going to cover all the bases. There's some question whether a salesman can keep them all in mind. And how we sell them, the first approximation will sell them always, all every channel. But we may have to sort them out with three machines, having three people sell them. I'll tell you about one of the machines. I'll tell you pretty much what all of them are. you could guess. Our DeckMate computer, which is based on our PDP-8 machine, which was designed about 1962, has all of those, that's 20 years of software, has for a number of years, we feel convinced, been the best word processing machine, best standalone word processing machine. With all of that background, you know, it's got everything. It's also the best small business computer because of all that experience. And we're going to repackage it. What is today is, some people convinced it's the very best. We just haven't gotten, we haven't told the world about it yet. But with that new package, it'll be so elegant that we think that's going to stay the world's best word processor for standalone word processing for a long time. The other obvious machine that you'll guess we're making is a PDP-11, and it'll it's one in which we're putting a fortune into doing software for, both for office use and for business calculations. And it'll have a hard disk and a floppy disk. And the other one is a standard, industry standard software machine. So with those three machines, we'll cover the market pretty well. This is the first set of products in which I've been completely happy with. All the years of making computers, I've always considered them a compromise. My frustration with the engineers who work for me is that they always say, one more year, we do everything right. Being an engineer, I've always had this attitude, but with this machine, it's just about right, and very happy with it. My other attitude is that most computers for office use or for people use, if either no thought has gone into it or it's gone into what has been called ergonometrics, as pushed by the Swedes and Germans mainly, where they make cold stainless steel, aluminum, sharp angle type tables where the angles and the heights and the tilts are the important thing, and they make great studies of it, and you end up with something that is shocking and jarring and upsetting, you know. Can you imagine working in front of one of those things? It looks like you're on a spaceship, but the angles are all right. The ergonometric people can't even decide on the color. It changes every year, color of the screen. Our attitude is ergonometrics with ambiance, pleasant place to work. The chairman of the board's big walnut desk with nothing on it, like he never works, machine will fit there. It'll fit in that messy, crowded room on Wall Street where all the traders are working. It'll fit in the operating room where the doctor has to watch it. It'll fit in the machine shop where they pour oil on it all day long. And it's all the things I ever dreamed about in a computer. And we'll show it to you in May. And it's designed to be manufactured inexpensively. We are also working on all the peripheral products for computers. Our biggest investment in hardware is being made in the area of disks, where we have always for years been behind in technology. Technology is being measured in the density, and we now feel that we are up with the leaders, and disks are probably the key part to all our products. And this is the area where we don't plan just to take second place to anyone. The integrated circuits, we are in a position to do much of our own design, much of our own manufacturing, and with this, we're able to integrate effectively with other manufacturers, where sometimes we have them design, often we have them manufacture, and integrated circuits and their packaging are a key part to all our future. Then, of course, software. Half our technical people are working on software. It's not quite half the budget because they don't use the capital equipment, or maybe they do in the form of computers, but we don't count it. And software is one of the major things, and we're selling or renting software now, and that'll be a big part of our income in the future. And the software we have is the major asset in our computers. The reason VAX is so popular is because of the software that goes with it. It's features in its architecture, many of which are patented, but it's the VAX software that makes it work and that makes it useful. We are also continuing work on any of the CAD, CAM operations. We sell many of the machines for CAD use. We sell them either to OEMs who add their CAD software to them and resell them to customers, or we sell them directly to the customer who then buys various parts of CAD software from the many suppliers. I went to a lecture a little while ago on CAD, CAM, and after they were done, I had to stand up and explain to the audience what they're talking about. I assume you all know, but I'll tell you anyway so they don't fall in the same trap. CAD is computer-aided design, and I'll tell you how we use it in digital. When we design a cabinet now, plastic piece. There's no drafting tables left in the room. It's all done in a cathode ray tube, all done by an operator looking at a large cathode ray tube. When the design is right, he pushes a button and a drawing is automatically made. When people are happy with it, the disc is sent out to the die maker. The die maker cuts the die automatically by numerical control machine without ever going by way of a drawing. and that's computer-aided manufacturing. We can now get turnaround time very quickly. I once asked our engineers, draw a quick and dirty picture for me of our VT-100 expanded just 2 inches. Don't spend any time on it, I said. I just want to see how it looks. He said, no problem, Ken. He said, put it in a CAD machine, change a few things, and out came a drawing. Matter of minutes. I said, no, I don't want to build it now. I just want to look at it. He said, no problem. We can just send the disc out and have a die made. $100,000, but as far as delay is concerned, it was negligible delay. For years, we have been, along with most other people, doing our printed circuit board design with computer. Now it's done with color displays, and it's so complicated you couldn't do it manually. One person said, Ken, with this machine, we could put it in the arcades, and the kids would pay a quarter of time to help us design our integrated circuits. It's so much fun. The difference is, with a CAD, people come to work early and you can't get them to leave at night. And they forget to eat. People at drafting tables would get bored before. They'd always be at the water cooler. And the reaction now is it's fun and they can't wait to get the job done. It's one big puzzle. When they get it laid out, we send the tape out to the boards get automatically laid out by machine. They get printed, and then the output of this machine drills the holes in all the right places, and then tests them all in the right places, all done by computer. And that's computer-aided manufacturing, or CAM. That's the CAD-CAM. Now, after the boards are done and tested, the parts are inserted automatically. And that really is a very extensive use of robots. It's been going on for many years. It didn't look like a human arm. But it's all the characteristics of a robot. There's large numbers in this country. We just didn't count them when we compare ourselves with the Japanese. We're concentrating a lot in the office application of computers. I was asked at lunchtime, has office automation arrived, or has the office of the future arrived? And my answer, it sure has. Let me tell you how we use it in my office. There are two key parts to office automation, maybe three. Word processing, electronic mail, and electronic filing. Word processing changes the way an office works completely, changes the way an individual works completely. In my office, typewriters only use to pass a note to me in a meeting that says, bring home a loaf of bread and a quart of milk. But other than that, there's no typewriter. I was looking for some correction fluid some time ago, and a secretary said, we've only been in this building 2 years, and we haven't used any correction fluid in 2 years. I asked the secretary how often she changed the typewriter ribbon. She says, we've been here a year and a half and never changed it on the IBM typewriter. We change it every 3 days on the word processing printer. The word processor is there all the time. They keep lists and schedules and just word processors taking over the job. There's some concern that automation is going to automate the secretary's job and do the part and make it a dull job, and it has just the opposite reaction. When I get about 200 requests for charitable contributions to my office alone each month, and about 200 job applications addressed to me personally, probably a lot more since the recession's gotten going. Obviously, I can't handle them. The secretary takes care of it. Today, there's probably a dozen of them they're working on when I'm not there. Now, most of those people call back later on and said, what happened to my letter? Now, I couldn't handle 200 of each, and you can see how it would frustrate the secretary if she had to answer what happened to somebody from last month's 200. But with the word processing, list processing, well, they're talking. She asks some information. What's the information in the machine? Out comes that request, and she can tell them exactly who is handling that request. And she has all the information. The people on the other side of the phone never knew that there were 200 also that month. They thought they were the only one, and she right off remembered them. Now, instead of making a secretary's job dull, they have the satisfaction of getting results immediately. Some weekends, when I'm irritated or prolific, I come in with a dictating tape with 13 memos on it, all to the vice presidents who work directly for me. Now, in the olden times, they would type them out, reluctantly retype them again as they put corrections in. Then I'd read them and add more corrections, and often I let the poor English go because it wasn't worth retyping. The secretary would then go to the Xerox machine and make 12 of each one, make out the envelopes and address them. And you know, Monday would be shot with just my weekend memos. Now, it goes on to word processing. Right there, she can correct them. If they look good, she pushes the button, out they go. And there's none of that dull standing in front of the Xerox machine and getting the right things in the right envelope and addressing the envelopes. And that's what the office of today should be, and the office of the future will be. When I want a copy of a memo I wrote, which is sometimes very discouraging to the secretary because sometimes I imagined I wrote it. I wrote it in my mind and never did write it. And I ask her for it. Now she can scroll through it or search for it almost instantly. And she never keeps copies. We don't Xerox a copy and file it. It's all filed on the electronic mail system. Electronic mail includes the file system. So any memo coming to me or from me is filed automatically. And so she gets rid of all of that terrible task. And when she takes a copy of something out of a file, she always has to make a Xerox because she can't trust me to give it back to her. And all of that disappears, the electronic file. When I want to send a note to anybody in the world, we even have electronic mail station in Lehman Brothers, so that, and all our directors, so we can send memos to, I think, 4,000 stations around the world, or our directors, or Lehman Brothers, and I don't know who else. I hope Bertazzi has good control of this, but many of our people have computers at home, which they do the word processing electronic mail on. And with that network, communication is too free. Now, there's some problems with the communication. I tell the story about Gordon Bell, our vice president of engineering, who wakes up in the middle of the night with an idea. And he used to stay awake with the idea. Now he goes to his word processor, sends out the memo, electronic mail, and then he can sleep. And when his memos don't look quite right, we look at the time. If it's 3 o'clock in the morning, we realize he was probably half asleep. And maybe in the daylight, he wouldn't have sent it at all. And sometimes a little too much information, but we just completely take it for granted now. And these are the three things that we think are the key part of Office of the Future. Word processing, which just changes the way a secretary or anyone creative works. Electronic mail, which means instant delivery of mail, and electronic filing, which eliminates a lot of the filing. We're working very hard to continue to develop this and to market it. With every VAX computer we sell, a mail system we call VAX mail is delivered with a machine. So the thousands of machines we have out there, many people outside are using VAX mail. We have another mail system which is compatible with VAX mail, but it's much more complete, does much more, which we call DEC mail. And And that is something we're selling with our office product. And as people get used to fax mail, they'll go to the deck mail. I think we have 30 installations with some of the largest corporations trying out deck mail for their own in-house mail system. We also include typesetting so that after things are written in word processing or prepared in electronic mail, we can set it in type so they can be printed with good quality printing. Oh, backing on how we use, another comment on how we use it. With all the faxes we have in the company, hundreds of them, our engineers have several networks of communication, all by fax mail. The programmers all working on one set of software, and there'd be dozens or hundreds of soft programmers, they gotta communicate. They communicate all of their information on between each other by fax mail. They do their software development on a VT100 terminal, and they sit in front of that all day long. And then when they want to communicate with each other, they do it through the computer with the fax mail system. Then technical comments are passed on between groups also by mail, and we eliminate large amount of telephone and traveling as a result. It's constant communication. And then there's some non-business things, sometimes about me, which also gets passed around. The other area of importance in this office business, and indeed our industrial control business, and many other areas, is in networking. Networks is where you tie large numbers of computers together. We probably have more experience in this area than anyone else, because it's been a key part of our kind of computing for a long time. Several years ago, we announced something we called DECnet, where we tie large computers together and sometimes other manufacturers' computers. And many of our installations today are tied together with DECnet. In addition, as many of you know, maybe more than I do, we have, with Xerox and Intel, been trying to propagate a system called Ethernet. Ethernet is a neat way of interconnecting computers. It's the only slick, obvious, neat way of doing it, and we have great confidence in its future. When we started our work in Ethernet, our attitude was, we have no great company interest in this, but it's very important that the industry standardize. And this is obviously the best one, and we'd encourage people to standardize. Now, we are more convinced than ever, after we've seen a number of other approaches, that this is the best. So we've developed an interest in it more than just casual. But unfortunately, many of the other people have their own systems. So maybe we're diverging more and more. There'll be many systems, and we'll miss the opportunity to have an industry standard. Nice thing about Ethernet, though, is that you can interconnect with everybody else's network, most likely. Many of them are announced, but they're not worked out yet. We think they can be interconnected. In summary, before we open up, let you ask all the questions you want, I'd like to say we don't understand the immediate future. We don't expect any significant problems. We can't predict the immediate future at all. We wouldn't if we could, because too many things changing. But our enthusiasm, our enjoyment, our fun, and the wonderful things still to be done on computers are still ahead of us, and we look forward to it with great enthusiasm, and we see no end of potential for the business we're in. With that, we'll let you ask questions.
Look,
for no hands, we can all go home early. Yes, sir. The question concerns with DEC efforts in vertical marketing, vertical software.
Give me some more hints as to what you mean. What do you mean? When we were new in the computer business, it was obvious that IBM did all the easy jobs. See, they picked the jobs which every company had, and they had a small number of applications, which they did quite thoroughly and did an excellent job. We had the job of doing all the hard ones, because there was an infinite number of them. So our approach was to admit immediately that we couldn't be expert in all the jobs, and we decided that we would do the general software and have companies and groups and individuals who were specialists in one application resell our equipment to that application. We call them OEMs. This worked very well. The result is that through these people, or these people through us, introduced computers into many, many applications, most of which we could never become expert enough to handle. And we still feel this is the way to handle most of the applications. Computer has so many diverse uses that we just couldn't introduce them all ourselves. However, we are becoming more and more detailed in our generalized software. We now are able to, and will be more and more able to, do most of the applications in a small office. And so it may appear that we're becoming quite vertical. On the other hand, every office or any company of any size has a number of things which are specialized, and they still will need these experts. And so we see a future for both us becoming more deeply involved in complete sets of software, and our customers becoming more and more involved in specialists. Now, when it comes to software for word processing, we've done that software. We have our own software. We do it quite thoroughly. There are many people selling variations of our software that, for one reason or other, the customer wants to have theirs. So we're still doing both.
Ken, you mentioned that you no longer keep copies of memos and files, and presumably that means you're very confident with your electronic filing system. You also mentioned that with future VAXs that you would be building in some redundancy. Can you discuss in general DEC's plans and needs to have more reliable, fail-safe, non-stop systems, how this will permeate the whole product line?
First of all, the question on files. Everyone, at the end of every day, copies all the files that day and usually carries it out of the building. So you never trust anything mechanical or electrical. Always duplicate it as some people up in space today are happy it was done for them. There's no such thing as fail-safe, never fail. It's just not true. But I think I know what you mean, where you would build in redundancy and you gain a lot of security. These ideas were new to us. We first did that in the SAGE system, which we, MIT, built with IBM in 1953. And we've worried about it ever since. Our PDB-6 had facilities for doing this. The question is always, you pay a price for it. And most of our customers didn't want to pay the price. You pay the price two ways. You pay the price of the equipment, and you pay the price for difficulty in programming. And some of the more popular so-called fail-safe operations are relatively difficult to program. And your fail-safe features are only as good as the programming. And so it's always a matter of weighing one against the other. And the bulk of our customers didn't want to sacrifice the software costs, difficulty, and the expense with that, and the cost of the machine. We have been developing a facility. We almost announced one. Maybe we should have a couple of years ago. We had, I think, four models of a 16-bit machine. We had the four models in-house being used. They worked quite well. We didn't think it was worth announcing at the time, partly because we didn't want to introduce more products. But in general, our attitude is most people didn't want to pay for it. But we are getting closer to do this with VAX, where you have a choice where with additional VAXes you get security or you get speed, and you can trade off between them. But it never comes free. Yes?
I wonder if you could comment in a little more detail about the competitive situation or environment where historically, I believe you've always mentioned you've done, as you just said now, the difficult jobs, and IBM's done the easier jobs, and yet you mentioned also earlier in your presentation that IBM set the standard. As you get bigger and bigger, do you feel that inevitably you do have to compete more and more closely with IBM, or is there enough business out there that you don't really have to do that?
We could truthfully say we don't compete with IBM, and we do, depending on how you look at it. IBM, of course, is the one we worry about the most. Often, when we bid on a job, IBM is the other bidder. And yet, our approaches are so different that, in a sense, we're not competing. Yes, there will be more and more competition. The other question is, will there be severe competition in the personal computer business? And I think that the answer is yes, but there's so much of it out there, and there are very few companies big enough to do the job that has to be done there, that I think plenty of room for two of us there.
While on the subject of personal computers, Ken, you indicated several models coming soon. Could you share with us your thoughts on how these will be distributed, what your marketing plans will be, gain share of market with your new products?
I'm going to try to get an idea across, see if I get into trouble doing it. There's one thing you learn in the computer business, or you die trying, which is very hard to explain. And one of them is we never know what we're doing. We never get things right. And with starting off with that idea, there's hope for you. With a complex piece of software, it is never without failure. We finally get it down to the never without mistakes. We get it to the point where it works well and does the job, but it's never perfect. With a complex integrated circuit, you put a 32-bit machine on a chip, it's never 100% right. It's the nature of a complex structure that you won't ever get it right. And with the attitude that we're never smart enough to make anything mechanical, when human beings get involved, we start off, we're not smart enough to understand human beings on top of the equipment. Besides that, we don't even know what we've generated yet. We as a society and we as a company haven't yet figured out how to exploit the computer we have. So with all of that humility entering in, we can say, we don't know yet how we're going to sell. We're going to try all ways. We started 2 or 3 years ago selling through our own stores just to learn how. We've learned a lot. And we'll try all the channels. We'll try the stores. We'll try dealers. And we now are selling through electronic distributors very well. And we do our own direct sales forces. We'll try all ways. So we're setting a program to try everyone. How it ends up, we'll take advantage of those that do best.
Steve? Does the current actions, such as the hiring freeze, price discounting, and budget cost reductions, indicate that you view the next short-term recession? recession impact as equal to the last recession impact, or less of an impact, or possibly more of an impact on your earnings?
The question concerns itself with the budget freeze, various actions you've taken to control expenses. Can you compare the effects of this recession with other recessions? Is that right, Steve?
We were set up to grow about 30% this year, and somewhere near 30%, and we won't grow that much. And when we cut back from 30% growth, that means stop hiring people for a while, and that's all that means. Just inherent in time in our business, with the use of computers and people getting better, there's an increase in efficiency that just comes about just with time and work, nothing, one thing in particular. And so we get efficient maybe 15-20% anyway a year. So the fact that we're not hiring anybody right now, or very few, just specialized reasons, there's no great significance in itself. There has not yet been significant price cutting in our business. There's still maybe to come, but there hasn't been. Now, how this compares to previous recessions, it seemed to me we had three of them in the 70s, at least two of them. I find no way of comparing the two, or the three. I think, you know, there's so much mischief creating this one that it's hard to sort it out and figure out what's happened or what will happen. I can't tell you whether the whole world's going to fall apart. If it is, we're going to be ready for it. You know, we got money, we got products, we got drive and fun, and we're going to survive it all falling apart. And everything in between, it might start booming second quarter, like some people say. And boy, we got people, we got facilities, and we're ready for that too. So anywhere in between, we're ready, and I can't draw any comparison until 2 years afterward, in which case we'd be bored and probably wouldn't do it then.
Mark?
Another comparison question versus 75. How would you compare the strength of your new product to the one you had in 75?